Welcome to the 25th Macro and Volatility Podcast. Today is Thursday, October 30th, 2025. My name is Eric Bender. I'm joined by our two experts, Michael Purvis, CEO of Talbach and Capital Advisors, a cross-asset macro research firm, and Josh Silva, Chief Investment Officer of Passaic Partners, a derivative specialist and manager of institutional and advisory assets. Before we dive into today's topics, we ask that if you like what you hear, please subscribe to the Macro and Volatility podcast on your platform of choice, Bloomberg and LinkedIn. As always, Michael is available to discuss his institutional research offering, and Josh is available to discuss his derivative solutions. All right, let's get to it. Michael, markets are making fresh highs every day, every other day. How long is this going to last?
Well, Eric, certainly, I think it's a pretty, for me, a pretty easy call that into year end, we're going to have a very robust equity market here. We've touched on that in the past, but look, when the market's up more than 10% coming into Q4, typically about 80% of the time, the Q4 is positive and often, meaningfully so, meaning 5, 6, 7, 8% here. So I think we're really on track. We're probably put in a, our third year of 20% plus returns for the SPX here. I have a 7,100 year end price target for the SPX, and I'm thinking that's probably a little bit too low actually here. I struggle to find out what's the catalyst to really break this between now and year's end. But I think, beyond that sort of Q4 melt up condition, I think there's a couple of themes I'd like to hammer out, which is that one, I think certainly this is my view, was that you stay with big technology companies. If you get a Q4 melt up, most of the time, the Mag 6 will blaze the path forwards in the last Q4 and outperform the rotation trade. Certainly, that's history. History will show that to you over the last several years here. But I also think right now you have a situation where the price earnings to growth ratio for the Mag 6, and I'm excluding Tesla here, is less than one. And if you look at the SPX equal weight, which is I think a good proxy for the everything else, that peg ratio is about 4.5 there. And both of those respective, pegs are still, very, very low for their own relative histories, right? So the Mag 6 peg is in the bottom 10% of all readings going back 6 years. It's not that long an index, but for the SPX equal weight, it's in the top 10%, right? And that, of course, that's before you're getting into some of the economic vulnerabilities here. And one of the themes that I'm also really championing right now, and I think this will extend into 2026, is that it's a K-shaped economy, but it's also a K-shaped stock market, which means you want to stick with the very largest companies here because those are going to be the ones that are going to be best able to handle all the economic vicissitudes that we're likely to encounter, be it inflation, be it tariffs, or simply having to reorganize their supply chains effectively here. So that's sort of where I am right now.
Got it. Thank you, Michael. So we're going to have to coin a phrase, K&K or special K, if you're so inclined. That makes sense to me. So we had the Fed yesterday. The actions were anticipated, but the rhetoric was far less clear, maybe even cautious. How did you interpret Powell's comments?
Right. Well, you're right. Everything was came in as expected. It was interesting to see the two dissents in opposite directions, one from Moran, one from Schmidt. That's sort of a taste of more dissents to come here. But I think what jolted the rates markets and the equity markets to a degree was simply the fact that Powell gave a lot of conditionality to a December cut here there. But look, I think if you zoom out, there's a few things that I sort of look at when we talk about rates and the Fed and the markets, which is that A, right now we are really close to neutral, right? If you look at various proxies for what the neutral rate might be, we're three, maybe at the most four cuts away from that. And that is really what rate futures markets are pricing right now. So sort of everything is on top of each other, right? There, that doesn't mean that's not going to change, of course, right? There, but to my mind, we are, it's a very different situation than a year ago when we were a lot further away from that neutral rate. And the neutral rate condition right now, again, we're not dealing with data, the greatest data set, but what we're effectively doing is a version of a year ago where we got to get ahead of any economic slowdown and get to neutral faster. Now, how fast that's going to be, we'll figure out. But I think there's another thing for the here and now in the rates markets, which is that I call it sort of a double blind condition right now because A, we don't have a lot of really key economic data, and B, Powell's is a two-thirds of a lame duck here, right? Like we're probably going to find out who Trump wants to replace him in December, or maybe January. But whatever Powell says right now is really going to be overridden by messaging from his new successor, as that is announced here. So the rates market is kind of, I call it vibing its way through the situation right now. We don't have data, and we don't really know who the next Fed president and leadership is going to be, and how hawkish or dovish they might be relative to Powell. I think one other comment I would just make here, and I was thinking about this yesterday during the press conference, which is that if you look at the inflation data that we have, I think most people would make a very, it's a pretty easy argument to make that inflation right now is probably not going to collapse a lot anytime soon here, right? It's pretty, you could feel pretty confident about inflation being somewhere around the 3% levels right now. But it's the growth picture, which is really where there's just so much more uncertainty here because we have so many sort of contradictory type things, and I guess that's only likely to expand in what I think is going to be an increasingly K-shaped economy, is that you're going to get more and more economic weirdness and contradictions here, right? So, but the inflation, in my mind, we got the CPI the other day, super core headline are all above 3.0% now there, and I think you can make a lot of cases here that 3% level is going to be pretty firm, and if anything, risk is to the upside here. I think it's important to note that mortgage rates have been coming down. Now that's good for the housing market, but the shelter component of CPI, which is the biggest one, that was sort of the best part of the print we got the other day. But if we get lower mortgage rates, and there's a good chance that will actually have the effect of reinforcing higher, not lower, housing prices and the shelter component to some degree here. So I think that's another thing I think that will be interesting to see is that if we do get a more dovish Fed chairman cutting into that kind of inflation picture, it's a recipe for being wanting to be long inflationary assets.
Got it. Well, thanks for that. If there's anything, Josh, you want to add to that, otherwise, I'm kind of shifting gears here to the more granular level, to the volatility markets, fixed income, equity, cross asset. And what is that telling you, and what should we know about that?
Yeah, I mean the fixed income market and the currency markets have been very, very quiet. I mean, fixed income vol is at low levels we haven't seen in a very long time. I think it's reflective if you look at where we were before this last easing environment. The 10-year was a little bit above 4%, and it's still a little bit above 4%, whatever it is, 8 to 10 weeks later. So in that sense, like we're pretty stable, not going anywhere. On the currency side, the euro has been in that 115 to 117 range, 116 sort of sticking, the yen around 150, 154. We had a new government in Japan going on the Trump route of lower rates to spur growth. So currency markets are sort of all, everyone's kind of doing the same thing, kind of pushing the same narrative. So there's no one currency winning over another. But which that leads us to, which I think is what's become more interesting, is what's happening in the commodities and equity markets. I mean, everyone can see what's happening with gold. That's a reflection of this sort of pro-growth, lower rate environment. It's sort of leaning towards where I would say where Michael talked about 3% inflation with the 10-year at 4%. Should it trade at that premium of what I call 1%? Or is the 10-year have a significantly good thing to buy here? And I think it's sort of pointing out that it's probably not a bad thing to purchase at this point. You think about commodities, same thing, gold. Copper have all gone up, oil being the exception. So kind of buy everything, and equities are equities. I mean, everything's going up sort of together with the Mag 6/7 leading the ride. And so it kind of comes down to what am I sort of saying? Buy everything, buy assets, buy vol, and ride the trend, because that's sort of what's working, and it's all working correlated to one. Reflecting on past market making experiences and thinking about how I would run a portfolio of risk, I would definitely just be long vol and long delta. The VIX sub 16 is very attractive. And again, this goes along with Michael's call sort of for the year-end rally. You're not going to get hurt too much on your hedge at this point if we're up another, let's say, 6-7% as Michael's called for. And so I think that sort of way of thinking of things is long stock, long options, long vol, is probably not the worst way to do it. That being said, it leads to my contrarian self, which I kind of call them the I don't know, the bizarro Superman version of myself. When everything sort of seems too easy, I always sort of get and start asking questions, because I get an unsettling feeling. And what I mean by that is, this trade seems so simple and easy to me right now that nothing tends to work that way. It tends to always be a little bit more difficult. And so I beg the question, is this make sense at this time, because of the fact that it just seems like such an obvious trade to me? One of the other things I want to point out is correlation levels within indexes, within the NASDAQ, within the S&P, are so low that actually pays to be long correlation, which is something I haven't seen in a very, very long time. That also raises some questions of caution. So it's another thing that I would throw out. Again, base case, assets likely to move higher, all of them, not just one, all of them. Most logical outcome, risk on into year end, as Michael pointed out. This is risk scenario, markets decline. Again, if it's a correlation one event on the way up, there's a significant chance there'll be a correlation down event on the way down. So this includes stocks and bonds going down together, and so the de-risking nature of bonds being less effective than what we're used to. So that's kind of it for me.
No, it's great. Thanks, Josh. That's helpful insight, certainly on the correlation component of that. So effectively what you're saying is the taxi drivers are now just buying whatever and it's going straight up. Again, you don't have to think too much, just go buy it is what I'm hearing. Michael, what do you any comments on
Not a lot of rocket science to buy
that?
buy.
Right.
So, yeah. Oh, sorry,
Eric. I sent one of my buy silver call notes a few weeks ago to one of my relatives, who sent it on, who was talking about it with his personal trainer, and he calls me the next day to say his personal trainer just bought a bunch of silver call options there. So yeah, we're in that part of the market.
Oh, now it's shifted. No more you. It's not taxi or Uber. It's
I think it's all
now
the
personal trainers.
there, but I think Josh made some really interesting points there on the sort of the cross asset vol situation. One point I would just add to that, which is that on the you look at the MOVE index, that's a VIX for Treasury vol, and that's at the lowest levels of the cycle just today. And so for all the time we talk about the Fed and rates, well, there's really the range of outcomes for actual treasuries is really not that high. But what it does do is this lower treasury vol actually is in my view, it helps ease economic conditions there. It's just helpful to know if the 10-year or the 2-year or the 30-year is a little bit more stable than it had been. That allows the economy to function better, and it also by extension it helps support the risk on here. And I think the other just a couple of other comments. I want to get back to this sort of K-shaped economy, because I think this is such a thing right now. It's also going to be, in my mind, it's going to be a bigger thing next year here. And one other point I would just make here, which is that if you are on the upper end of that K, the upper stem, you probably own equities and you probably own real estate. And so in this type of condition where you have a Fed cutting into 3% plus growth and still pretty low unemployment, that's a recipe for being long inflationary assets. But on the other hand, if you don't own equities and real estate or other inflationary assets, and you're on the bottom end of that K, well, then you can get run over by that in th those inflationary impulses there when you go to the grocery store or pay your electric bill, right?
You're saying the savers really have an advantage versus the income earners, I would say.
Yeah, that's another way to, exactly. That's another way to put it. But I think right now, I look at the K as being driven by A, technological shifts. We clearly have that with AI. And we also have that by having what I think is a still a very dovish monetary policy of cutting into refreshing a cutting cycle into an economy that's strong here. So that is going to me, that's inflationary, and that will ultimately make the K even worse or more extreme.
Yeah, I mean, owning assets, which we've learned over the last 7 years, has been the best way to generate revenue versus getting a job at times. So it's sort of not necessarily the way we want to think about the world, but it's very much what's happening. I personally worry about, I'm beginning to worry about the economy as a whole. See things like Chipotle's numbers or Shake Shack talking about spending of 25 to 35 year olds dropping as income drop, because they are the people who are at the bottom of the K cycle. They are the people who don't own houses or don't own assets. And that's, you know, worrisome. I mean, to throw a little damper onto this burning flame of equities going higher. I think if you remove that AI CapEx, the economy is not as good as everyone thinks it is. I mean, we're starting to see the layoffs, this hasn't happened in a while. You have big layoffs coming at UPS, you have big layoffs coming at Amazon come out. And so these are sort of things to think about that are new. And the economy is sort of heading in two different directions in the sense of AI top of the K versus non-AI bottom of the K. If you think about why the Fed probably will cut rates, is to sort of help that bottom of the K. And as you pointed out, though, what is that going to do? It's going to pump up asset prices even more, which again helps the top of the K. So I guess it's sort of like, which way do you go with this? The trade war, I feel like every day it's one way or another. It can create some headwinds, but it always seems like at the end we get to a different place. I don't know. This last meeting with China seems a little bit less bullish than we've ever have. I mean, there's always like a bullish outcome the way these things are spin, but I think we need to pay attention to this. One of the other things, Michael, you and I have talked about, and is this sort of higher earnings and lower employment, which is again, it's that K part of the curve. While we see the bottom K sort of eating into incomes and lower employment, we are seeing companies make more money than they have in a very long time, which is the sort of higher part of the K. I like this K analogy. I don't know where it's new to me, but I kind of like talking about it. So now more about it. And so therefore I continue to be bullish due to CapEx, but I'm nervous about the impact on the greater economy and the greater society almost. I worry about the irrational exuberance in equities, not to quote Alan Greenspan, AKA 1998. And I always hate bringing that up because that was one of those days that you hope to never repeat from a trading perspective. But we did get another 18 months of irrational exuberance higher in equity. So, there's things to be aware of, which is why I like the long ball, long equity trade.
Yeah. Just to put some of this AI CapEx in perspective, if you look at the Mag 7, and it's really for this discussion, it's really the Mag 4, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and Meta. They're going to be spending over the next 24 months, street guidance is at $900 billion, right? That's a lot of money, right? And that's just those companies, right? That ignores all the other companies that are exposed to this AI boom. But, just for point of comparison, we talked a lot about in the Biden administration, the Infrastructure Act and the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, as being, this giant, giant stimulus that was creating all this created growth, but also created inflation. But if the headline numbers were certainly daunting, right, in the trillions of dollars. But if you actually look what has probably been spent by both of those together, it's of the tune of about $400 billion, right? Depending on how you count, right? Maybe 350, maybe 500 over the last 4 years. This is $900 billion in the next 2 years, right? I mean, it is a form of fiscal stimulus in a way, but it's also comes with a very, very specific economic multiplier that I don't know if any economist really understands how to think about a whole bunch of AI factories, what the economic multipliers are going to be there, because it's not, you're not building an auto plant,
No,
right? And there's
the
no
experience
right. So
to
it's going to
get that.
be, we're definitely wading into uncharted waters. But the point being is that certainly parts of the economy are seeing a boom like we have not seen in a long time, right? From that fixed asset push. And it's a very focused, it's a fire hose, right? The legislative stuff gets sort of dribbled out, but if you're Google, you're just going to go do it,
Yeah,
right?
fair enough.
Yeah, for sure. So, coming kind of full circle here, putting a bow on it, I think, when we talked about at the beginning the K-shaped economy, we've fallen in love with the K-shaped economy. I think it's the Mag 4, Mag 5, Mag 6, and then everything else. And I think the economy is somewhat that too. It's kind of those that are, the asset owners, the stock owners, and then it's everything else. So, I don't know if it's a barbell or if it's kind of the core group and then everything else. So with that in mind, final thoughts here, takeaways. Josh, what do you think?
Want a leader?
Well, I guess, look, certainly from the here and now, I'm just I love Q's, I love the Mag 6. But I also, gold has obviously been through a lot of consolidation over the last couple of weeks here, but I still think gold miners offer enormous value here. If gold goes down to 3,600, which it still well could, miners will be dragged down, but the cash flow generation out of these things is enormous at 3,000 per ounce gold here. So I'm long those, and the same thing for the silver miners as well. One last little comment I make just on gold, since it's been so in the headlines recently. But if you look at the price action since the gold and silver peaks, it's extraordinarily different than what it was after 2011's peak and the 1980 peaks there. So it's a different type of fresh lifetime highs for those two metals.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I feel like we're in the middle innings of the gold move. If you go back to the 70s, it's like 10,000s almost in the future, which is crazy to say, but it's sort of, if you look at a charting basis, you can get there if you work real, real hard and get real, real creative. That being said, I tend to would also, besides being long equities and being long gold miners, I would throw in anytime the VIX gets sub 16, you probably should own some equity volatility here as a way of managing that position. So that's
Six,
it.
six, 16 is the new 12, something
16 is
like
the new
that.
12, especially with things going the way they are.
Yeah.
So that's all I got.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Josh. As always, I learned a lot. You can find them both on Bloomberg, LinkedIn, and their respective websites, www.talbakkencapital.com and www.passaicpartners.com. Thank you for joining us today. And remember, we'll keep an eye on what matters in the markets for you. Thank you.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not investment advice. The information, opinions, and views expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended as investment advice. The opinions expressed may not align with Passaic Partners' views or its client strategies. Market forecasts are speculative and should not be the sole basis for investment decisions. Consult your financial and tax advisors before making any investments.